ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Jules and Jez here, and every week on Not Stupid, we chat about the news in your feeds.
State and Territory governments collected about $9 billion in gambling taxes in 2022-23.
That's a massive amount. It's a substantial amount of money. To unhook themselves.
It's a sugar hit that if you give that up.
But we haven't had that conversation.
No.
It's like, do we accept that social evil?
You can find Not Stupid on the ABC Listen app.
The Albanese government is getting closer to inking deals on its watered-down hate speech laws and its gun laws. It comes after Labor split the omnibus legislation, negotiating with the Coalition and the Greens separately to get the two bills through. But while all signs are pointing to the Liberals supporting the changed hate speech laws, it's less clear if the Nationals are on board, which means the Coalition looks to be splitting. Partly, or are they? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvalis.
And I am Raf Epstein from ABC Radio in Melbourne.
And Raf, we're reunited on the pod after a summer break, and it's been an extraordinary week for you on the airwaves, but just broadly, like, what a time, right? Parliament's back. I can tell you, because I'm here in Parliament House in Canberra, it is chaos today. It really is. It has been, I can't tell you what a wild ride.
I have been watching from afar. I had a chat to the PM yesterday. We'll get to the hate groups, hate speech, gun laws, but I'm very interested in what he's not going forward with yet and whether or not he'll be pressured to do something significant on hate speech. And I've also spent my summer in central Victoria, looking at fires, watching fires, leaving because of fires, talking to people whose houses were saved by our volunteer fireys. So, yes, everything is happening, and it's still the middle of January. It very much feels like everything is going on.
Yeah, it certainly is. Look, yesterday I spoke to Claire Armstrong about the condolence motions on the pod, and it was a very sort of somber day. By last night, the Coalition held their party room meeting to deliberate about how they would ultimately vote on the bills. By this morning, Raf, and I think this is key, I'll give you a sense of why I think it's chaotic. So I got like a message saying, get to the Parliament, because I'd sort of expressed I'm working on another project. I want to get to every press conference I can. I'm here. I'm doing about four hats at the moment. And so I got a message from Senior Liberal saying, get to the Parliament because Susan Lee's going to be up soon. You know, deal on the hate laws. And so I bolted. I've always got my sneakers. I don't know if you know this about me, but my sneakers are in my backpack always. Like I'm like April O'Neil, my partner calls me. So I'm like running to the Parliament, literally.
I want the video.
Looking ridiculous. Yeah, it's pretty wild, right? Like ready, poised. I am recording this just after midday. That is now, I think, about 6 hours ago. No press conference from Susan Lee. Now, I'm not critiquing Susan Lee per se. I am going to tell you this. She is struggling to get the Nationals over the line on what are already very much watered down hate laws. That tells a bigger story about the Coalition and the way it's functioning. A disrespect, I think, of her leadership, especially after she thumped her chest after the Bondi attacks. Obviously, we're seeing, you know, by the time people hear this, maybe the Nats would have come on board, although I'm not seeing the signs yet. But it does demonstrate just what a difficult thing this has been. At the same time, it's important to mention, I think, that the Liberals have also, some Liberals rather, have been playing hardball. On that front, they did get some of these Liberals on side. Raf, what's going on?
Look, I do want to get to what they have achieved, but when I was talking to Liberal people last night, they are pissed off with the process. They don't want to be a party of protest. They want to be a party of policy, a party of government. They are worried, I think, that Susan Lee is doing too much of the protest stuff and not enough of the policy stuff. I don't know if that's the same tensions that are reflected in the people you're talking to. I think it might be worth us stopping and propping. Maybe let's divide up what we think's going to happen from what we know won't happen. So let's start with the gun laws, maybe. The gun laws will happen because the Greens will agree to them. The way I look at the gun laws is stricter checks on the license applications. Most people, I think a lot of people, not most, a lot of people would support something like that. There's going to be a national gun buyback scheme. Where the Nats are upset, but their votes don't matter in this instance because of the Greens, is around the limits. I was actually really interested in the limits. So the recreational users getting 4 guns, farmers and professional shooters. A lot of people in my, you know, my part of the world in central Victoria, you need them. Deer, roos, foxes, there's a lot of people. They're allowed up to 10 guns. So this is the stuff that David Littleproud is calling a cheap political diversion. So they are very upset about the gun laws. That doesn't have an impact on whether or not those gun laws actually happen. That stuff will happen because of the Greens. What do you think people need to know about the hate speech laws? Because I think we need to divide it up. There's hate groups, so there's banning groups, and then there's real hate speech laws, which that's the thing that's on the back burner. That's the thing the PM says he's not going to revisit, but that's the thing I reckon he's going to be talking about again. What do you think people need to know about the hate laws?
What's important to recognise with hate laws is that the government already blinked on the weekend. They already diluted, watered down, use any euphemism, any version of that you want to make them really much weaker laws. So much so that they are saying his but ulterior, which is a sort of group that certainly the right wing of politics believes should be banned. They've made it clear. It would be harder under the laws that they've changed now and put before the parliament to ban it. Doesn't mean it's not. They've obviously tried to create an architecture where it is possible, but harder than the original laws that they had to can because of the coalition's problem with, you know, it restricting free speech. Now, I think the questions around free speech, I just want to say this because I think it's important, are very legitimate. Rushed laws that have a chilling impact on freedom of speech matter, but if you don't appreciate the sort of impact having broad-ranging laws like that that sort of talk about what you can and cannot say and criminalise it, which is a pretty significant bar, right?
Can I disagree with you on something?
Oh, please, but what is it?
Well, when you say it's rushed and it's hard to do these things.
It is rushed.
It is rushed, but that's not the reason it's hard. It's hard because it's hard. We have been talking – well, the significant Jewish community organisations have been pushing – for creating a new criminal offence for something like 2 decades. They essentially want to say, so in the criminal code, if you incite someone to do something violent, so if I say Patricia's really awful and you should beat her up, that's already covered in the criminal code. Mm. But if I just say Patricia's a really awful, evil person, she's toxic, she's a real danger to the body of the nation, that is not an offence under the criminal code. It's hard to make that an offence under the criminal code for a whole range of reasons, not the least of which you've got to get a majority in the parliament to agree to it. You've got to jump over the eventual bar of the High Court. So when you say it's rushed, it is a rushed process, but it's hard because these laws are hard. And because they can't create this new criminal of offence, which is essentially saying if you incite an emotion in another person, if you cause another person to hate another group in the community, that's just a really difficult law to draft. It's not so hard because it's a rush. It's just hard because the law, that's a new law. We don't have a law like that. And it's almost impossible to get people to agree. I should say as well, we've got those laws in Victoria. Mm. So that might be the model later on for where the government goes.
I do want to say though, because this is like, you know, the pod is moving fast. I was nervous about recording, but I think we've got the vibe. I'll tell you something that's sort of breaking now. Are you ready?
Yes,
are you ready?
I'm ready.
Listeners, are you coping? All right. The Nationals have called another snap party room meeting to discuss their position on Labor's hate group laws. They want further guardrails around ministerial powers to prescribe a hate group that's been proposed, which the party is hoping to come to a position on before question time. That's what they're hoping.
So break down that language for me, PK. What does that mean? So Hizbut Tahrir, you spoke about the fact that people inside the government feel it would be hard to ban them. They are prescribed as a terror group in Britain. There's talk around maybe the really strong, zealous anti-abortion groups. Maybe there's a fear from some in the Nationals that they might get shut down with a law like this. Like, what do you think's really going on for the Nats there? And a reminder, they need the Nat and Lib votes in the Senate, the government, for this law to go through. So what's their concern?
Okay. The concern is what groups, you know?
Yeah.
So if you want to be a group that's against mass immigration and you start using fired up rhetoric, right? Why can't you? So do you notice, right? It's just radical Islam that everyone seems concerned about. Now, I think radical Islam and the terror we've seen, just to be clear, is incredibly serious.
And, worth worrying about,
yeah,
taking seriously.
I'd be losing sleep. In fact, I do, right? I mean, I am my entire career, one of my first career moments was, as in, like, I was a working journalist, was when 9/11 happened. That's how old I am, and you too. So you don't have to tell me that that's not, like, radical Islamic terror is a real thing and should be taken very seriously. But to be kind of so narrow in your lens that you don't equally seem very concerned about extreme far right and maybe white nationalist kind of power, which is also incredibly dangerous. ASIO's told us this isn't just some random view I have. Then that seems a little odd. So they're obviously concerned about the way who will be able to and why there's a political concern around that for one reason. It's one nation, and the way they're positioning on all of these issues and the political implications for the right of politics. Am I on the right wavelength?
I think you're 100% on the right wavelength. I think it was Bridget McKenzie yesterday who was sort of, I mean, I'll call it, she was posturing, saying, "I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is, I can say it," as though people are somehow afraid to say it. Radical Islam is the problem. Well, okay, fine. Someone's come up with a solution to try and tackle some of the groups that have been actually targeted by the serious people on parliamentary committees. And they are, for reasons that I don't understand, not willing to go along with cracking down the very thing they say should be cracked down upon, while competing with, it's worth putting this in context as well, talking about radical Islam while not supporting a solution that's been proposed. They are competing with One Nation. One Nation, I think for about 10 years, their policy was a royal commission into the entirety of Islam. So that's not on their website anymore. I don't know if that's their current policy. So it's really easy to throw mud, and it's really easy to make accusations. It's really hard coming up with a law that's going to cover us in the future and cover all situations. The parliament's trying. They're failing to come together. I heard you guys talking last week also with Charles and also yesterday saying it's a bit of a failure of leadership. I am sympathetic to the idea that it's a failure of leadership and there's a bit of posturing going on. But it's also really, really difficult. Which bit of Hizbut Tahrir do you object to? When you, like, we had these massive protests in Melbourne that were about migration and about what they call mass migration. And the neo-Nazis were giving speeches on the steps of the Victorian Parliament. But how do you create a law that bans that neo-Nazi group but doesn't attack the people the PM said had genuine but misguided concerns?
Yeah, of course.
Like, those laws are really, really, really hard to contain.
Yeah, all of that is true. And of course, that's why I used the word, you know, and you took issue because it's been discussed for a while. I get it. But with the rushed nature, because that's the thing about laws which restrict behaviour and speech, you know, they're sort of Orwellian, right? Like, you need to be very careful about how they're used because, you know, you might not like someone else's speech. But I'll tell you this, my friends, which is why I'm always generally on the side broadly as a human of free speech, as a journalist as well. It's all very good until they start telling you your speech isn't allowed. Right. And then the rules start changing. So that's why you need to be alert to
Let's throw forward to the future then, because we've got gun buyback stuff, although there's going to be a real hiccup potentially with Queensland if Queensland doesn't come on board, and if there isn't a big buyback scheme in that conservative state, then the effectiveness of the national scheme, it's obviously watered down. We've got what I would call hate group legislation and not hate speech legislation. Do you think they are going to revisit something around hate speech? There's very things that we're talking about, how difficult it is to put a criminal sanction around emoting or inciting an emotion in another person, inciting hate in another person, are they going to be forced to revisit it? Because we've got a Royal Commission, right, all year. Who knows what signature moments there'll be. We've got any number of times when that Royal Commission is going to bounce back into the Parliament. How much are they? Is the government going to be pushed to do that? And it goes back to, I guess, also to what you're saying. If the Liberal Party are divided, if they don't have a great policy process, are the Liberal Party going to be applying heat for a racial vilification law?
Mm. Not if they're not at one, right? Yeah, I think that the questions you ask are really important and relevant. And the problem for the Coalition is that throughout this period, they've looked completely at sixes and sevens on these issues. You know, they go hard, or Susan Lee did, on anti-Semitism and speech and the emergency nature of all of this. And then they end up sort of going the full free speecher from some people, clearly not others. And I'll tell you not others. Just in the Parliament a little earlier, so we're recording this, as I say, after midday on a Tuesday, opposition education spokesman and senior Jewish person, Julian Lisa, said the Liberal Party, and I think this is really important, this quote, because it just shows the division inside. He said the Liberal Party had chosen to stand with Jews and pass the hate reforms, which, as you and I mentioned, are already watered down. You know, just keep that one there because they didn't stand with the other piece. But this version, because Labor's come to the table very quickly on this. Bondi represents the moment of choice, he says, and the choice the Liberal Party makes this morning, as we have always done, is to stand with the Jewish community and law-abiding Australians. That is not just a message to Australia and to Jewish Australians, although it is. It's also a message to the Nationals and others.
Well, it's a message to people inside his own party, isn't it?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Now, all of that, messy, 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 very messy, it's a real problem for Susan Lee, I can assure you. Because if she's out there ready to do a deal, ready to negotiate, I mean, I've heard from government people that, you know, she was in there negotiating kind of with last minute, oh, can you do this too? Because, you know, I can even name them. I know people like Garth Hamilton and others who are on the sort of right, you know, sort of more hasty camp, if you like. There's camps. So the conservatives aren't all at one. There's a more populist conservatives and then the more traditional ones. So it's all gotten a bit different in the Liberal Party. We're demanding more changes. So Susan Lee's trying to reflect that. The government's negotiating with her as she's asking for more of that. Now the Nationals are even pushing further. How exhausting.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to get progress with the Coalition, right? Let me make a prediction. You're not going to get an extensive hate speech law with the Coalition. Victoria has new laws. The only way the Victorian government could get these new laws up and running is, and this actually goes to the heart of the conflict, right? Like if you want to see the conflict between, say, the Greens and the Nats, it's, no, no, we're only talking about anti-Semitism. We're not talking about other stuff. That's the priority. If you talk about other stuff, you're somehow downgrading the threat of anti-Semitism. So that's a really sensitive, red-hot button issue. The Greens will say to the government, I'm sure, if the government goes back, you can't just do it on race and religion. It's got to be hate speech around sexuality, around gender, around something like disability. That's what the Labor government had to do in Victoria. We've just got laws, new racial vilification laws, but they're not just around race. Because the Greens said, no, it's not just a thing that attaches to religious groups. It attaches to other groups in the community. I cannot see the Liberal Party agreeing on a substantial race hate law. I could see the Greens doing it, but only if it's not just anti-Semitism. It'll have to be about anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, sexuality, gender, disability, everything. That's the only way that the Jewish organised groups will get one of the things they want after Bondi, and it's one of the things they've wanted for the last 20 years.
Oh, it's something they've been calling for a long time. Look, I think ultimately, though, as the Parliament's been sitting for 2 days, just last reflections, the government, I thought, looked pretty shabby and a little bit. They sort of were losing their way a little when they sort of went hard on the bill and then they had to split the bill over the weekend. A bit of a back down from the Prime Minister. The way politics is read is that was a bit of a, you know, capitulation of sorts. But boy, oh boy, does the Coalition eating itself and its young have an ability to give the government the bounce that it wants?
Well, look at
not
the polls.
Saying the electoral bounce.
Look at the polls.
Well, everyone's suffering. Any mainstream party's suffering in the polls. But, yeah,
the Coalition's behind One Nation.
Yeah, in the news poll.
Think about how much Albanese suffered over summer, how many people criticised him, how significant the backdown was on the Royal Commission, and sure, they took a hit, but who's really taking the hit? Like that, the structural, foundational, tectonic shift that's underway in right-wing politics, it's Trump, it's Farage, you know, in the English-speaking world, right-wing politics is changing. Susan Lee, Andrew Hasey, you can tie it to the personalities. It's still, they cannot wrap their brains around because it's genuinely difficult. That's why they're suffering in the polls. I don't know if that coalition, you know, falling behind One Nation is real in the news poll, but as for all of the heat Albanese copped over summer, and he copped a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's the coalition who, in the when you ask people who they're going to vote for, who are suffering. And I think that's really significant. Like, politics is in a different place. Yes, Albanese's really lost a lot of skin over summer. Yes, the government and people inside the government, when you talk to them, are not happy about the way he's handled things. But who's suffering the most in a poll? Sure, Albanese's approval's in the toilet. But those poll numbers, like, that's dire. Like, that fundamental right-wing direction, that fundamental tectonic problem hasn't gone away. What do you think we're going to see this year, PK?
I think this is a really significant time ahead, you know, with the big caveat of the next federal election is some time away. But there's a few political events that are worth looking at. The South Australian election is soon. I think the Liberal Party is looking at that very closely. They expect a catastrophic result. We know that's sort of almost a one brand state, the Labor brand, and Malinowskis is obviously very popular. So, but that will very much be used, I think, as a launch pad perhaps for a tilt at the leadership, you know, some sort of spill against Susan Lee. That's something I'm watching closely and a lot of Liberals are talking about. So that will happen. We had yesterday, I went to Pauline Hanson's press conference where she was, you know, saying I was doing this before Farage, before Trump, and look, it's finally working. Australians, you know, I've worked on this for 30 years and I've got there, even though, you know, polling isn't actually an election. So you actually have to deliver it in an election result, which, you know, she says she knows her work's cut out for her. She did say all those things, actually, that she's aware of, obviously, the fact that that has to now transpire into a real election result. But, yeah, I think the disruption will continue inside right-wing politics. So I think the Liberal and the coalition is at a real inflection point in terms of whether they stay together, break bread. But the example I always use when I talk to even people, because I've been working on a project which is very much talking about these themes, more will be revealed soon, I love to tease, but I can't help myself, but is I've said to people, you know, it reminds me of like the left and the right fights inside Labor, and they weren't as ideological, but they were for the left on asylum seekers and boat turnbacks and all of that. And ultimately, the left just ate humble pie because they decided they wanted to win.
Winning
was more important.
Yeah, you can't do anything if you're not in power.
And now it's become kind of normalised, and I can't see Australia really changing that position because the architecture seems to be, you know, as hard as it will be for some people who oppose it to hear, working.
Right? We're not getting sort of...
And also just, you know, turning back boats. We're not seeing lots of boat arrivals. The example I use is on climate, on maybe immigration and multiculturalism. At some point, you know, the right, you would think, would say, okay, some of these issues are more mainstream in Australia and we might have to suck it up. There's a reason they're not, though. It's not just because they love a fight or they're ideological. Some of them that I've spoken to genuinely believe this is more mainstream than we all realise, that we've got our head in the sand, I've been told. And I'm like, really? Because I haven't seen it in the data. I cannot see it materialising. Happy to admit it if it's coming up, but it's still at the fringes. Yes, Gen X men are more interested in One Nation, but we're talking a small cohort of one gender. We are still not talking about the swathes of women or the swathes of multicultural Australia. There's still an issue for them, and they need to increase their vote, not just take some votes from One Nation, right?
You are 100% right. I've had the same conversations with people. You've got your head in your sand. You don't realise the power of, you know, of One Nation, Farage and Trump. However, Patricia Karvelas, you are a traitor. You are a traitor to your home state because the significant political event this year that you did not mention is the Victorian state election at the end of the year. And a final thought to leave you with, the chaos inside the federal Liberal Party is wait in the saddlebags for a party that is already underwater in Victoria. The Victorian State Opposition Leader, Jess Wilson, the Liberal, she's going to struggle, large number of seats. It won't help her if there's a federal fight and chaos throughout the year because federal politics gets more exposure than state politics across most media, unless you listen to your local ABC radio station. Just a little log roll there, thought I'd get that in.
I do love that. I respect it. Well, that's it for politics now for today. But, Raf, I mean, you know, I was nervous about recording now. The Nats are meeting. Anyway, we've given them a good taste of what is politics 2026. I cannot believe it's 2026.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Can we still say it? Yeah, it's before Australia Day. Tomorrow, David Spears is back with me. Thursday, The Party Room with Frank Kelly. Send your questions to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. We'll try to answer them. See you, Raf.
See you later.